two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse Show. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Ton Bettis, talking about your favorite topics when it comes to gardening, news of the day. We're taking your calls. We'll take your questions at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions on the Utah Community Credit Union app at 57500. Let's talk about a little bit of the news of the day. We've been hearing about this dangerous quick-spreading tree disease that was introduced in Utah, Dutch elm disease. Let's talk about that.
Well, Dutch elm disease is actually a disease that's been around in the United States for over 100 years. We noticed it in a park back east, and it went away for a little while, and then it came back with a vengeance. And we suspect that it's originally from Asia because many of the Asian elm species are resistant or immune to it. And so the Dutch elm disease comes in. The reason we call it Dutch elm disease is because it was also noticed in Holland. Mm-hmm. So they got the privilege of having the Asian disease named after them.
I see.
So the Dutch elm disease attacks American elm that has no resistance to it. Didn't evolve with it. So it's a brand new pathogen, relatively speaking.
So how is it impacting us here in Utah?
Well, nationally, the American elm went from being the most common shade tree planted in landscapes from North Florida into Southern Canada to being almost extinct. And so it's decimated American elm populations through the nation. The disease didn't show up in Utah until the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then within just a few years, most of the elms were decimated here. So there's a few American elms around. Logan, I know of 5 or 6 in city parks and at their county building has a huge one. BYU actually has one that they put on a fungicide drip preserve it. The Utah County Courthouse has one in front of it that's a weeping American elm, but they're very rare and very treasured trees. And so there's been a lot of work over the last 20 or 30 years on breeding resistant varieties. And what will happen is that they will take a resistant species and hybridize it with American elm. And you have a roughly 50-50 mix. And then they take that tree and back cross it to American elm several times to where you get about 90% of the genetics that are American elm and 5 or 10% of the other species. But they try to keep the resistance in there. And so you can buy online resistant American elm to Dutch elm disease. And as long as they're not overplanted, they're okay. But how this disease spread is we overplanted American elms so much that you would have entire streets lined with them and they root grafted to each other. And that disease got into one tree and just went right on down the line through the roots and it killed most of the trees. The other thing is there's two different little bitty elm borers that get in and spread it through the canopies. And so there are certain cities up through Southern Canada, Minnesota areas that have preserved their American elms through very thorough pruning and tree removal. But with those few exceptions, the American elm was a very useful and very common tree to something that is almost never planted.
Right. So anyone who may have an elm left in their yard, do they still need to worry about this?
If they're not American elms, it's not a worry. We plant a lot of Chinese elm, which we call lace bark elm. We have a lot of hybrid elms. And so these species are resistant or immune to it. They have genetics that make it so it's either been bred into them or they evolved with the disease. And so I want to differentiate between the Siberian elm that seeds up in our lawns and you get hundreds of them sometimes. That's a nasty, bad tree. But the other elms, the hybrid elms, the lace bark, are fine trees and they should be planted more.
Okay. The number to call if you have a question, 801-575-8255. One of the other thoughts in the news or stories in the news was about a pumpkin freeze. How were our pumpkin growers impacted?
There's a shortage of pumpkins. A lot of the areas that experienced 18 degrees, 16 degrees, and for short periods of time, those pumpkins just won't tolerate that. They'll tolerate light frost, 28, 27 degrees. And so in the coldest areas along the Wasatch Front and in Utah, we had a lot of local pumpkin patches ruined because of that frost. And so the stores are getting them, but I would recommend getting pumpkins for your kids now because the closer to Halloween, the chances are that we may run out.
Yeah, I noticed in some of the stores, the supplies are kind of going down. So
they are.
Think about that this weekend.
I mean, it's usually Halloween, and I procrastinated, and I'm trying to find the least rotten pumpkins that I can bring home. But in this situation, there's a chance that we may not have any come Halloween because of the shortage.
Okay, not the year to procrastinate. Our texter asking, is it too late to aerate their lawn?
Not necessarily, especially if you had compacted soil. It is getting a little cold. The lawn won't fully recover until spring. But if you have access to an aerator and can get it done, go ahead.
Next texter asking, can they grow a walnut tree from a walnut?
Yes, you can. So if that tree matured the walnuts, there's a chance that it has adapted to the local environment. And so what you would do is just mark off a place in your yard and put those nuts in the actual nuts into the ground and watch for spring. And when you start to see the seedlings come up, you can dig those and put them in a pot or move them to where you want to. But my father-in-law does this all the time. He has a ditch bank and that he has his like little walnut nursery. And periodically he will put six or eight seeds into the ditch bank and just let them grow up, and then he scoops them out carefully, puts them into a little gallon container, and we'll give those out to whoever wants them.
Wow, walnut trees do very well here in Utah.
They do. You need to find varieties. If you're buying a commercial one, that will ripen the nuts in less than 120 days. Most of the California English walnut will not ripen in that period of time, and so you need to make sure that you buy short season walnuts. But they do quite well as long as you get the short season kinds.
Right. When we did our succulent centerpieces this morning with the pumpkins, I did have some walnuts there. And those were from my sister-in-law's yard. But she just, when her tree, I mean, it just gets a ton of walnuts every year.
Yeah. And if it's producing every year, it's one that may be worth preserving those seeds, because a lot of times you'll order one in and it only ripens nuts one out of every three or four years because of her frosts. And so if it ripens every year, it's one that I would collect the seed and grow those, because we know that it's going to be more reliable.
Yeah, we use the walnuts for a lot more things than just, I mean, obviously I'm using in centerpieces and wreaths and things because there are just so many of them.
There are. In mentioning those walnuts, there's actually the, you know, you mentioned Dutch elm disease. There's a species of walnut on the East Coast called butternut, or sometimes it's called white walnut. And it's cold hardy, more cold hardy than the other walnut species, but it's also being decimated by a canker disease that was introduced, and we think from Japan, we're not sure, but this butternut is a very important species ecologically. The nuts taste wonderful, but wildlife rely on it for protein in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like this glamorous, everybody knows about it tree. And it's just one that's kind of been in the background, but we do have several species like American elm, but the butternut is also being decimated by a disease that was introduced that we are in danger of losing. And so there is some work going on, but because not everybody knows about it, it's just, there are many species out there like that, that we have introduced diseases slowly or quickly decimating American ash. So there's many things out there that are, because of the global nature of our culture now, that we've got insects and diseases wiping out local species.
We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Cammie is calling from Pleasant View. Good morning, Cammie.
Hi. Yes. My question is, we have an area probably about 2 feet by 10 feet filled with bamboo that has just kind of taken over, and we'd like to get rid of that. So just wondering what we should do with that.
Is it still green?
It is still green. We just cut it all down. Oh. We always cut it down in the fall.
Well, you're going to have to wait.
Okay.
I would have had you leave it and with all the green foliage on it and spray it with Roundup with a surfactant because you need to kill the rhizomonas roots. Well, now that it's all cut down, you're not really going to be able to get an effective spray on it. So wait until it starts to come out in the spring. And when you get a foot to 18 inches of new growth on it, I would try spraying it out then. It may take a couple of applications.
Okay. Okay, that's great. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you so much for your call. The number to call if you want to ask a question, 801-575-8255. We need to take a break. You can also text us your questions at 575-0. I can get that right. And again, the number to call, 801-575-8255.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, along with Ton Bettis, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Let's take a call now from, we have Jared in Roy. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning. My question is, I have a dog in the yard, and I've got lots and lots of grasshoppers. So what's the most effective way to kill off grasshoppers and make it sure my dog doesn't eat the pellets or whatever you can buy at a store?
Well, in some ways, you have a conflict here that you may, depending on what you do, need to keep the dog in for a day or two or something if possible. But are you in the west area of Roy where you still have a lot of farmland, or are you more surrounded by homes?
I'm surrounded by homes, but I am on the western side.
Okay. Well, on the western side, because it's still developing, you're going to have more grasshopper problems than you would, I guess what I'll call Roy proper, more along State Street in that area, just because of the area you're in. And so the management strategies, you would want to recruit some of your neighbors so you get a wider swath and make sure you're in the middle. So what you're going to do is in the spring, you can pick up a bait called Nolo bait, N-O-L-O. And what it is a fungus that the grasshoppers, when they're small, will digest, and it either kills them or prevents them from reproducing. And if you can do that in several houses in that immediate area, you will have far fewer grasshoppers.
Okay, so that's in the spring?
Yes, in the spring. There's nothing you can really do now. If you find their egg sacs, you can dispose of them. But, I mean, if you needed to do some spraying, you could spray the plants in your yard where they're most likely to be. So if they were tearing up a privet hedge or something, that's one thing that you could spray. And then leave the other plants in the yard alone, so you're just doing some selective spraying. That's another technique. Or you can try spraying, say, the perimeter of your yard and not spray everything in the middle. And as they try to hop in and feed on things on the perimeter, they'll die, you know, sooner, and you'll have fewer of them invading your yard.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call. Let's go to Mary in Midvale. Good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. I had the outside of my house treated for wasps and hornets and all those things. And the treatment seemed to kill two of my clematis and one very big, beautiful honeysuckle. And I'm wondering the best way to prune that honeysuckle without, so it can hopefully come back next year.
The product they applied, I guess there's a possibility it could have scorched the plants you're talking about to where it was more of an instant, just scorched the leaves and didn't work its way into the roots. And so what I would do is just go ahead and cut it back to near the ground and see if it starts to pop out in the spring. Now, because it's been cut to the ground, it may be that it doesn't send up any shoots until mid to late June, and so you need to be patient.
Okay. And when you say close to the ground, are we talking an inch, 2 inches?
A couple inches, 2 or 3 inches.
2 or 3 inches, okay. And the same would be with the clematis?
Yes, if it was also scorched and died, then I would go ahead and cut it near the ground and just see if it comes back.
Okay, because I know they used a powder, and they said the insects would pick up the powder and take that back to their nests or whatever.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I mean, there could be something else that did this and not necessarily that powder, because if it was a liquid, a lot of times they have to use a surfactant strong enough to immediately penetrate the wasp's body, and that would maybe scorch. But if it was a powder, I don't know that that would have done it.
Yeah. Well, they deny it could have been them, but the timing is absolute. It was like, you know, the day after they started to go.
Yeah. So at this point, all you can do is just cut back the dead and then see if it regenerates in the spring.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm going to live dangerously and take Don's call from Alpine. Hi, Don. We're coming up to the top of the hour news, but tell us your question.
Yes. Good morning. I have two blue spruce trees and a pine tree in my front yard in Alpine. They're all close, fairly close together, within approximately 20 feet of each other. The pine tree, I noticed about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the needles were totally brown. The blue spruce, one of the blue spruces, they're both about 30 or 40 feet tall. It started dropping its needles, and they were brown. So I don't know for sure what's going on. All my neighbor's trees look really good.
Well, what has anything changed in that area that would have all of a sudden caused those trees to brown out? Construction, any construction changes or any sprinkling system changes or flooding or anything?
Yes, well, we did change the sprinkler system. But that's been about 2 years ago. We put it on timers. Actually, I think we just put it on timers. It was last year. So we are watering probably more than what we were in the past.
Usually when a tree all of a sudden up and dies, it oftentimes is because the irrigation changed to where they're getting too little water or too much. And if that soil is constantly moist, then they could have died from that. We're up against a break right now, and so we can hold you through or we can stay there, but we need to get that national news so that we can keep the show running.
Don, stand by and we'll help answer your question coming up following the top of the hour news. And again, the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500.